Hey, now when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Truckers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trucker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, good morning. Good afternoon, good evening to all you Blood River Radio, precious Blood River Radio family out there. We have one hell of a program for you tonight. Before I go to the prayer, I'm just going to tell you, every February, for as long as I'm alive and as long as there's a Blood River Radio, will be Germany History Month. We're going to talk about all about that stuff. We're going to talk about Dresden. We're going to talk about the so-called Holocaust. We're going to talk about the Nuremberg trials, the mass rape and the intentional famine created in Germany after the Second War. After the shooting stopped, we're going to talk about just the murder, the intentional murder of tens of thousands of German POWs that were captured, that surrendered honorably, thinking they would, Lord bless their heart, they were so naive, thinking they were going to receive humane treatment as outlined under the Geneva Convention. But to their misfortune, they were badly wrong. There's tens of thousands, maybe millions of them died, starved to death, died from the elements outside. But we're going to talk about all that this month. But people, if you know, if you're listening to Blood River Radio, my name is Eddie the Bombardier Miller. And if you know, this is a Christian radio show. In case you don't know the date, we always say this is February the 11th of the year of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ Almighty, 2023. There's no name under the sun which man can be saved except Jesus Christ Almighty. And you know, people, this is a Christian show, and we always start with a little prayer. So if you will, bow your head. We got a quick prayer tonight because we got a long ways to go and a short time to get there and with a limb in the way. So if you will, please bow your head, people. Almighty God, Almighty Father, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of Blood River Radio, the God of Liberty News Radio, Lord, we ask you to continue to look down upon Blood River Radio and all of our people here, all of our white people worldwide, not just in the United States, not just in the South. Look down on us, Lord, and if you will, please give us your grace and give us your protection because, God, as you well know, we are under assault like never before. The forces of evil, the forces of Satan, I can guarantee double damn to you that the forces of the Antichrist spirit has been unleashed from hell, as spoken of in Revelation in the Bible. The Antichrist spirit is everywhere. And I won't take up time, oh Lord, to name it all, but we'll talk about that in the future when we have more time. But Lord, if you will, please knock the scale off of our white people's eyes worldwide. Let them see who the true enemy is. Let them realize that they're not helpless, and let them get back in the fight and help us regain our liberty and Lord, and to preserve, keep us from being exterminated. Lord, the white people of the world, as on our website, as outlined on our website, is we're fighting against global white genocide. And our people here, Lord, all over the world, we are in a program of global white genocide. So, Lord, if you will, give us the wisdom on how to fight that fight. Give us the tools. And, Lord, never let us shrink. Never let us lose faith. Never let us lose courage. And I ask all this in Jesus' name, Lord. Amen. Well, people, as we said, we always name the donors, too. We have one donor this week. It is Ken Big Ben. Big Ben from Lynbrook, New York. He donates like clockwork. God bless you, Lynn, Ken. We could not have Blood River Radio. There would be no Liberty News Radio without our donors. That's the way it is. People, I just told you what we're doing this month. And the first and second hour, we have two huge guests. We have a great guest. His name is Paul English. He was the voiceover for Hellstorm. Tom, Tom, a.k.a. Mike Goodrich. I can never remember if he liked to be called Tom or Mike. But we just call him Mike. Mike Goodrich, he had a stroke in August. He's not able to come on the radio, but Paul English, who is just as expert, if not more so, than Mike Goodrich in the book Hellstorm and what happened to Germany after the Second World War. And we also have, who in the world could be better to run this interview with Paul English than my little sister, Miss Monica Schaefer? No one is better. And we thank God for her and people. So what we're going to talk about tonight, and I'm going to get out, we're going to talk about, I just said, German History Month. We're going to start off with last week we covered parts of the Holocaust. And we'll cover that again before the month's up. But like I said, we're going to talk about the Nuremberg trials and all that stuff. But tonight we're going to start off with the great book Hellstorm. And we have Paul English. We're going to bring Paul English on, and then my little sister, Miss Monica. So how are you doing tonight, Paul?
I'm doing fine, Eddie. It's good to be here. I was thinking when you sent me the invite the other week, how many years we've done this. Which makes it sound an awful long time, but it's quite a few. This is at least the third. It might even be the fourth, but it's at least three. At least three, because the first one we did was with Tom. Then I think we did another one with Tom and possibly Dave Gahary. I think we did, maybe last year. So this is the third at least, and I think it might be that. But yeah, I think the idea of you devoting February and turning it over to sort of a German history focus is a good thing, because it's a tremendous pivot point. It's very valuable, as many of the threads and themes that we're having to deal with today are evidenced in that conflict, in that period of history for Germany, you know, throughout the 30s and the 40s. So there's lots of things to learn from that which are directly applicable to our situation today. So good to be here. Thank you very much for the invite. I'm looking forward to it, and obviously with Monica as well.
Well, thank you for being here. By the way, people, just in case you hadn't picked up, that's an English accent. That's not Southern. That's not the old Confederate history accent. But Paul is calling in. He's on our computer system, coming in from England. And it's getting kind of late over there, so we really want to thank him for being on. We're going to keep him 2 hours if he can stay. And now we will introduce the person who really needs no introduction and who's going to drive this interview, my little sister, Miss Monica Schaefer. How are you doing tonight, Miss Monica?
Excellently, thanks. Thanks, Eddie. I'm really looking forward to this next couple of hours. Well, the next 3 hours. I know I'll be on with Paul for the next 2 hours, and I know there's a lot to cover. I think that the first thing that comes into my mind when we talk about Dresden is my mother's voice. She always asked, why Dresden? Why Dresden? And, you know, she didn't talk too much about the war years, but when she did and she got thinking and talking about Dresden, it was just with this deep, deep sadness and profound. She was just so perplexed because she knew, she told us, there were no military targets there. It was the most beautiful city. Every single building was carved exquisitely. Like, these are not just functional to live in or to work in. These were works of art, every single building. And no military targets. And the city was filled to bursting with refugees, Germans who were fleeing the Reds from the east, the you know, the army, basically the Red Army, part of the Allies, you know, they were, and they felt safe coming to Dresden because 5 years of war, there had been hardly any disturbance in Dresden. They were a little bit perplexed by that, but they also just felt in that Germanic way that they trust that everybody still has some human decency even in war, and they felt, well, it's just so beautiful, how could anybody possibly bomb such a beautiful city with no military targets? This was the thinking, and they felt quite safe there. It was Fushing Night. Now, Fushing is kind of like, I think in the southern states, Louisiana, Fat Tuesday, perhaps that's what you call it. So that's a night where everybody goes out and dresses up. And this was not being celebrated in most places in Germany because, like I say, this was towards the end of the war and Germany was flattened. It was in dire straits. But in Dresden, they were celebrating that night. And then the sirens went off, but hardly anybody paid heed because 171 times before that, the sirens had gone off and nothing had happened. So they carried on. But Paul, why don't you go from there? But although I think we're just about a minute left before the first break, but I'll let you go from here.
You're knowledgeable about the breaks. I'm going to have to learn these. This is good. But I think you were saying why, you know, why Dresden? I think we could say not only because they thought they would get a great yield for dropping the bombs. You got to understand that they did have literally calculation charts for this sort of foul way of waging war. We have to bear in mind, of course, that World War II was the first time that civilians were actively targeted in any major war. Maybe, I suppose, the Spanish Civil War they were. But in World War One, that was forbidden, verboten, was not on because it was deemed wrong, which it is. But by now, we were already in the descent of civilization, I suppose, so the behavior is pretty bad. But I think it's because it was such a beautiful town, made it more attractive for them to destroy for that very reason, for the demoralization purposes.
Paul,
is definitely
we have to
a key
go to
part
our
of it.
First break. I hate to have to interrupt you. We have to go to our very first commercial break. We'll be right back. Hold that thought, Paul. We'll be right back.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Dear Blood River Radio people, family, I'm a little bit tense tonight because I'm so excited about this interview. I think you can understand why anybody would be excited. But anyway, we were just talking during the break, me, Sister Monica, and Paul. We were talking about how the Lincoln's War, and I'll make this brief, the South legally seceded from the North. Seceded from the United States of America. We here in the South, as 13 states, we were an independent nation. It was legal to do so. All the cadets at West Point realized. The Declaration of Independence outlined it. Any time, you know, any state wanted to leave the Union, they were allowed to. That's what they did. They were an independent nation. So that criminal, that Satan worshiping Abraham Lincoln, when he invaded the South, his generals, William Tecumseh Sherman especially, made war. In fact, he called it total war. There's a lot of similarities between the South, the Lincoln's war against the South, and the Satan's war against Germany in World War I and World War II. Tecumseh, he intentionally attacked civilians. He raped, there were thousands of white women in the South raped. There were thousands of old men and young boys hung. Gene Andrews detailed on this show several times, how the Yankees plowed salt into gardens, into fields where that land would never grow anything. They killed all the animals. Any foodstuffs they couldn't use, they burned. Anything of value that couldn't be stolen or hauled off, they burned. They tried to kill as many civilians as possible. And that same thing went on in Germany before, during, and after the Second World War. And with that, I'm going to shut up and go back to you, Miss Monica.
Actually, let's go back to Paul. You were just on a roll there just before the break, and so I'm going to just let you continue on your train of thought there, Paul.
Well, it's just picking up where Eddie, and let's try and stitch these two things together. I mean, what Eddie was talking about just then, I was talking to someone the other week. I haven't done a great deal, certainly not enough study of the War of Northern Aggression in America. But it is obviously a pivotal event in history. And one of the reasons why I didn't look was not because I thought I knew what it all was about, although I had a pretty basic idea, but I thought I would find pretty much the same sort of skullduggerous dynamics at play that were behind the English Civil War and the French Revolution and the Russian Revolution and World War One, and I did. It's the same thing. The labels are different, but the principles are the same. The same sort of wanton disregard for life and the waging of all sorts of levels of horrific war, totally unnecessary to achieve things, in light of, well, basically decent people. So I think there is a great parallel between the plight of the southern states during the War of Northern Aggression and Germany. Because the parallels are that both were Christian-oriented people, strongly. They were independent, they had their own cultures, and they were both fighting really a defensive war. They did not initiate things. Of course, over here, we are taught that Germany was out to take over the world. This is, and when you're 5, you believe this. When you're 15, you probably still believe it. When you're 25, you really shouldn't be believing it, but you probably do. And until somebody drops any sensible books into your hands, or you've got this kind of internal intellectual itch that you can't scratch and you start to satisfy it, you remain clueless. And most of my peer group, my people in the 50, in their 50s and 60s over here, maintain the view that, you know, Germany was a very bad, naughty country and started it all. And I have a huge communication task in front of me, which can never be completed because they've always got to go to the pub. You see, you can only hold people's attention for just a few minutes. And there is, unfortunately, a great deal of ground for us to cover because there's layers and layers and layers of lies around this thing. And so I do understand why people have this false impression. Going back to the point just before the break with regards to why Dresden, I suspect for all sorts of reasons, I guess. I mean, maybe we would never know. Maybe someone knows exactly why. But as we were saying, there was a huge amount of people. It was swollen to the rafters, to the gills, you know, was Dresden. Absolutely cram-packed with everybody, as you said, Monica, on the retreat from the oncoming Red Army in the east, which was not very palatable. Obviously, their reputation preceded them, and it was not good. Although there is, you know, there's kind of two Red Armies at play. There is the European Red Army, which did have levels of gallantry still left and chivalry in it. And then there is the Eastern hordes behind them, which didn't have an ounce of that. And they were let loose like packs of dogs, you know. So a terrifying prospect, no matter who you are, not a good one. So I think it was for the reasons, obviously, they could create a great deal of death. But the main thing was the final sort of demoralization blow. And to ruin great works of art and a beautiful city. And I've seen the photographs of Dresden, I'm sure many of us have, you know, of the architecture, the way it was laid out. A place I would like to live in right now. I would like to live there as it was then. I'm sure many European people would value that. When you see it, you go, this is how things ought to be. And it was definitely like that.
Indeed.
Then it's like, you know, it is. It's shattering our culture, which is a reflection of us. The buildings that we design. I'm not talking about the monstrosities that go up today. We're not designing those buildings. These glass and steel boxes that look like junk. They are designed to demoralize. Architecture
That's
is
right.
the demoralization weapon in these modern hands. And so when you see beautiful things, which is what we are bound up with as a race, we move towards that whenever we're given a chance, rightfully so. Then the enemy revels in destroying the beauty that we've created. And so I think that would have been a key part, you know.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Can I just interject there? I do believe there is a quote by Churchill who said something to this effect. Don't tell me how to, you know, try to get the military target there. No, tell me how I can baste 600,000 Germans. Like, I think he was quite explicit in his expression of just wanting to kill Germans, and he hated Germans. I mean, he had expressed that. Am I right on that, Paul?
There would have been things like that. I don't know that specific quote, and I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I know he had a guy, his right-hand man, he called the Prof, was a guy called Lindemann. And Lindemann was a half-Jewish, half-German gentleman, I believe, who was the guy that actually plotted graphs about the high-yield effects of bombing, where they should bomb. And so I know that with regards to the major cities, including, although Dresden's really sort of, because it was crammed anyway, it didn't make any difference, but with regards to, say, Berlin and Hamburg and these other major cities that received an onslaught, they intentionally targeted the bombers on the sort of terrace housing there. And the reason was that they would get more dead people per square yard than they would anywhere else. Literally, they calculated it like this.
Exactly.
And
the
workers'
quarters, yeah. You know, that where people are living
Correct.
Quite densely.
Yeah.
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 It shows
you the kind of mindset. Yeah. It's horrific.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, we're repulsed by that. They just revel in it. They think it's great.
It is actually. I can't think of a more evil thing. Is this deliberate targeting of people who are not in the military, just civilians, women, children, old people, and it was deliberate. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they started with, I think Hamburg was the first city to really get the firebombing in 1943. Maybe there were others before that, but then I think it was like something like 160 German cities. Maybe it was more. Maybe you know more about that, Paul, but how many of these German cities were targeted specifically to kill the civilian populations? This was a kind of a different new approach to war, although not totally, because like Eddie was saying, in the South, in the American South, this was done. The civilians were targeted. And killing all the animals and destroying the gardens with salt and whatnot, what you were saying, Eddie. I mean, it sounds to me like certain people's holy books where they say to kill every last, you know, woman, man, baby, child, animal, leave nothing alive. So that's what this is about. I think Amalek comes to mind, that reference to Amalek. So, and you're talking about the beauty of the buildings and the beauty of the city and this deliberate destruction of that. You're absolutely right. I think they just, it's hard for us to imagine,
we're
but
to
their
go
goal is
break.
To destroy beauty.
Monica, hang on to that thought, dear. We've got to go to a quick break. Be right back.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Dave Collins. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski says the U.S. needs to send a clear message that it will not tolerate intrusion into its airspace. This comes after a high-altitude object was shot down over the state Friday. Speaking with NBC, the Republican lawmaker called Alaska the country's first line of defense. National Security Council Coordinator John Kirby at the White House.
I think we're going to continue to learn a lot about how these things can be detected in a better way. So from this incident last week, we will learn, we'll certainly learn about the capabilities of that surveillance asset, but we're also expect to learn more about our own processes and our own systems.
Moscow says the calls to ban Russian athletes from the 2024 Olympic is unacceptable. A group of 35 countries, including the U.S., will reportedly demand that the country's athletes be blocked from attending the game due to the ongoing war in Ukraine. The move also puts more pressure on the International Olympic Committee to act in their favor. Over 56,000 COVID-19 antigen tests have been recalled. This, according to Universal Meditech Inc., the company issued a nationwide recall of the SkipPak Medical Lab rapid test kits. The kits could potentially cause inaccurate test results. Manufactured from October 21 to December 21, distributed in January 2022. This year's Super Bowl halftime performer getting ready for the biggest stage of her life.
Rihanna getting ready for her Super Bowl halftime performance. The pop superstar said in an interview that things are coming together and that performing on such a large stage for the first time in a while is exhilarating. Rihanna said representation is important to her and she's excited for her new son to see that. The singer welcomed her baby with rapper ASAP Rocky in May of last year.
That's John Schaefer reporting. This is USA News.
My heart was racing just making spaghetti. I could have waited to tell my doctor, but I didn't wait.
I was short of breath just reading a book. I could have delayed telling my doctor, but I didn't wait.
They told their doctors and found out they have atrial fibrillation, a condition which makes it about 5 times more likely to have a stroke. If you have one or more of these symptoms, irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, shortness of breath, fatigue, or lightheadedness, this is no time to wait. Contact your doctor.
Brought to you by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
Walt Disney World says it doesn't plan to fight the changes lawmakers are moving to make to Reedy Creek Improvement District. Walt Disney World Resort President Jeff Fall said in a statement that the company will let Governor Ron DeSantis take control of the Board of Supervisors that governs the area around the theme park. We are now finding out the fallout from the Uvalde mass shooting.
The Texas Department of Public Safety investigated the conduct of 7 troopers. One was fired and another faces.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, I'm so excited about this interview we have tonight. In case you're just tuning in, we have the one and only Paul English. He's in from England with us tonight, and we're talking about, this is February. Every year is going to be German week, German month, excuse me. I keep saying week. It's going to be all German history, World War II, Dresden, Holocaust, the Nuremberg trials, all that stuff, the intentional starvation of the Germans, the famines, the mass rape, just the mass satanic evil that was inflicted upon Germany. Tonight, in case you're just tuning in, we're talking about, we have Mr. Paul English on. He was the voiceover for the audiobook Hellstorm, and we have my little sister, Monica Schaefer, on, who's driving this interview. And I believe we're going to go right back to Miss Monica. I believe she was the last one talking before we went to the break. Go ahead, Miss Monica.
Yeah, sure. Just before the break at the bottom of the hour, I was agreeing with what Paul had said about the reason why did they bomb Dresden, other than that they wanted to kill the maximum number of Germans, and they knew the city was full of refugees fleeing from the Red Army. But the city was just so beautiful, the architecture was just stunning, and this was destroyed. And this is really true that it is one of their goals. It's right in the congressional record, 1963 congressional record in the United States, the Communist Party, their goals, stated goals, are to uglify the art, for example, put all their people into the positions of being the art critics, make art and culture and music ugly. This is stated. And I don't think I need to spell out who predominates the Communist Party. So it's that group of people we're not allowed to criticize lest we be called anti-Semitic or some such label. Anyway, also during the break, Eddie, you had mentioned this book by Theodor Kaufmann. He wrote a book called Germany Must Perish. Now, what did he mean by that? What he proposed in this book, which came out, I believe it was 41, I believe, and it was actually praised and talked about in some of the mainstream media outlets in the United States. They didn't put Theodor Kaufmann in jail for hate speech. Oh, no, no, no. They said, oh, what an interesting proposal. Well, he proposed that they hire, 20,000 doctors, surgeons, to basically sterilize, castrate all the men, like from whatever ages, teenage age to old, and take care of that, and voila, you don't have any more German people in the next generation. You do away with the German problem. And this was actually written and taken seriously. And this was not the only book in which there was a plan to exterminate Germany and Germans. So yeah, this whole thing about bombing cities, that was all part of the plan to get rid of Germans and Germany. Really had nothing to do with who the country was run by, but they did, take that man, Adolf Hitler, and demonize him more than anybody's been demonized in our history. I'll pass it over to you, Paul, if you want to jump in there and take from there.
Yeah. Well, something just before the break, I'm trying to remember that, regarding Churchill, you were saying something about his intentions with regards to Dresden. There is a quote from him, a sort of an overall quote, not specifically focused on Dresden, goes something along the lines of, this war is not against Hitler or against National Socialism, but is against the might and strength of the German people as a whole. His orientation was that the strength drawn from the people had to be smashed. And of course, this kind of nutcase thinking, which is really what it is, was around as well prior to World War One. There was a chap here called Lord Grey, who I don't think was as venal or as reckless or as useless as Churchill was. But I know that there's an anecdote somewhere from about 1906 where the American ambassador is with him. And, of course, up until this point, throughout most of the 1800s, the Industrial Revolution in England had yielded an awful lot of bounty, and we were doing great. And then Germany decided to actually do the same sort of thing. And this put the noses out of joint of the so-called elite over here considerably, even though we're cousins. But this doesn't seem to matter because they're like all narcissistic nutcases, the whole lot of them. I would say probably on both sides of that, by the way. It's not as if it's all entirely a British thing. Whenever you get leadership circles, they do end up being sort of psychopathic or sociopathic narcissists, and it's a real problem because they are literally impossible to communicate with. And there is no communication with them at all, just the appearance of it. But I remember in this little anecdote, the US ambassador said, well, what are you going to do? And he said, oh, we'll have a war. Lord Grey says this. Really? It's a bit like, what? Why? Why don't you just sort it out? No, we'll have a war. That was their sort of, default position. Let's just use it, and we'll burn up a lot more British bodies and a lot of German bodies, and we'll just blow it. We don't care about them, really. I mean, this really has to be understood. There's literally no concern whatsoever for the welfare of the masses amongst this set. And there never has been, or certainly not over here for a couple of hundred years. There used to be, but that's been sort of slowly falling away over here ever since the English Civil War. And we have a, you know, we're noted for a class divide over here. It's more subtly hidden these days, but it's still there. And that was their default position, to go to war, to just do that because of trade and industry. And, you know, there is that phrase that all wars are bankers' wars, and because we know who most of the bankers are as well. So it's very accurate. I mean, coming back to the entire conflict of World War II, my thread, my thinking, this is not necessarily the truth, but the bit that helps me the most in my thinking all the time is that this was a war, as they all are, over economic strength. And that's why Churchill was talking about destroying Germany totally. Didn't like any of your ideas. Didn't want Hitler pulling the Germans out of the doo-doo in 3 years flat. I was talking to someone about it the other day. I mean, I don't know if you're aware. From about 1935, 36, when Hitler had his programs so that the workers could get on these large liners and visit all over the world, South America, I guess, was probably particularly interesting at the time, they weren't allowed to dock at Tilbury Docks in and around London and anywhere in England, because the British government did not want the English seeing well-fed, well-dressed, happy Germans getting off of very technically equipped boats coming into England, where the English were still going to the bottom of the garden to go to the toilet. And this was not on, you see.
Isn't that something?
Whenever it is, it just tells you that the enemy of the English was their government back then. And yet you could say that Germany was this rarity in that the government of the time was the friend and the ally of the people. That's why it worked. It was different. And maybe I'm laying it on a bit thick. I'm not saying it was all perfect and utopian. It was none of those things. But it was of a totally different order of thinking and managing the nation. And, of course, you know, going back to this parallel as well with the South is this distinct culture, as I understand it, at the time. It was almost like two nations. It was agrarian. It made most of the money in America at the time. The North wasn't, but it had its, what's the euphemism that they use for them? Oh, yeah, Northern industrialists. That's what they're called, aren't they? It had those guys up in the North who subsequently became the carpetbaggers. Same with Germany. You've got this cohesive people. And when you think about the principles that both sets of people are stressing, they are entirely biblical. They're about the strength of the family. They're about the homogeneity of the race and concentrating it, because that is a law from God unto us. You can't race mix. It's not sort of, well, I mean, I know people do, but it's against the law to do that. The law, not man-made laws, the actual laws of nature. You don't do that sort of thing. There's all sorts of reasons for it. Of course, the interferers have brought that about. So you've got this conflict of orientations, and most people do not know too much about what occurred in Germany from 33 to 36, and it is astonishing. And if we were to apply the same sorts of policies and principles now in America and England and Europe, we would have exactly the same result. But the world controllers would be out of a job. So that's why I think they dealt with Germany so harshly to some degree, and have continued to perpetuate this idea of Hitler as the most evil man that ever lived, which is complete bilge, of course, because they don't want you or anybody else going over there and getting pally with the ideas that underpinned the transformation of Germany between 33 and 36, and after that as well. So it's that's why it's
Paul,
deemed toxic.
We have to go.
Yep.
We have to go to our last break of the first hour. We'll be right back. Hold that thought, Paul, and I got a few comments when we come back. So hold on, people. We go right back to this last break. Hold on.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com. Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at cspoa.org. That's cspoa.org.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
I'll tell you one thing that every good soldier knows. The only thing that counts in the end is power. Naked, merciless force!
Dear Blood River Radio family, this will be the last segment of the first hour. Don't fret. We're going to Paul English has agreed to stay with us into the second hour. So has my sister Monica. But we're going to go right back to Paul. He was speaking before we went to the break. I don't know if he wants to talk about. We were talking about the economics, the German economic system, the miracle, really. It was a miracle system that Hitler and the Germans, what they did to pull Germany out of just total famine and just despondency after that hellish Treaty of Versailles. But anyway, we talked about the economics, the currency systems, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm going to go right back to Paul, and he's free to talk about anything he wants because, after all, we're blessed to have him on with Miss Monica. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, yeah, I guess if we're carrying on with this little thread on the economic side, and you know, there's all sorts of levels of complexity that you can study and look into, and they're all valid if you've got the time. But many of us don't have so much time as we once had to study all these things to the nth degree. I mean, my framework for thinking is, what is the essence of this so that I can look at it, and how could we apply it today? In other words, it's not simply just to be a history lesson in how things have gone wrong, but hopefully it's a tutelage on how we could finally put it right. The thing is that there have been periods throughout history when we have got it right, like America 1776 to 1860 was right, although the rot had already set in before that conflict happened. In Germany in the 30s, they had a hellish time in the 20s, and that's because that was an orchestrated hell, economically, socially, culturally, everything. It was a disaster. Intentionally so by the people that organized that disaster. So what is it that changes? Well, with the arrival of the National Socialists in power, the whole economic system is restructured. And it's restructured along the correct lines, phrases that we don't even hear anywhere today. Because if you turn on the news, which I wouldn't advise too much. You don't want to watch too much of that. But if you do and you catch the so-called economic news, really the entire framework, the context for the communication is that we must all pay very close attention to the health of the economy, right? The economy is the great bogeyman. It's going bad. Oh, we're in a depression. There's not enough money supply. This, blah, 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 blah. It's been like this my entire life. And probably yours too. It's always, oh no, there's something else to worry
yes.
about. Yes. Have you noticed? Non-stop. It's always that. And so the feeling one gets, the kind of conditioning that we are subjected to, is that we live to serve the economy, which we actually do, unfortunately. But that's not what we want. We want the economy to serve us. Now, that's what happened in Germany in the 1930s. And that's why war was declared upon it. Because if you're a banking scamster, and they all are, whatever their ethnicity, all of them are that, then you can't have a nation, in this case Germany, running around disproving all your low-grade ideas, which you've been foisting and corrupting upon people for centuries, and demonstrating in 3 years flat that they're complete junk, that your entire economic think tanks and all that is total garbage. It's all utter rubbish. And the reason it's utter rubbish is because it's based on things such as fractional reserve banking and the manipulation of markets and all this other kind of stuff, which we're not interested in. This is why we're not good at it. We're not interested in that. We don't care about that. And we're never going to care about it, realistically. It's not where the love of life is. It's not in markets. So when they got in charge and began to orientate things for the actual health and benefit of the German people, is it any surprise that Hitler was as popular as he was in 1935 and 36 after putting these? It's no surprise at all.
Some
anybody
of those terms
that could do that for their people. Yeah.
Yeah. That was so well put, Paul. Some of those terms, like brilliant. You gave an example, fractional reserve. It's just mumbo jumbo meant to just confuse us. And some of these newfangled terms, I can't list them now, but I've read something about them. They're just non-entities. They're concepts that are just mumbo jumbo. And this is very deliberate to keep us thinking that, there's experts who are running things and we just have to defer to them. But what was that book you were mentioning during the break? And this would be perhaps on the side of tutelage, like you were saying, like we need to teach ourselves that how it could be done. Do you want to mention that?
This is a good one. This is a good one. It's called Hitler's Revolution by Richard Tedor. I don't know if I pronounced his surname correctly, so I apologize, but spelled Tedor. Maybe it's Tedor, but I'm going to pronounce it Tedor. Richard Tedor. So there we go. And it's about the underpinnings of the resurgence of Germany under Hitler. Look, here's a little bit from the liner notes on the back. I'll just read this out. It says, the government's success at relieving unemployment and its special programs to eliminate class barriers unlock the secret to Hitler's undeniable popularity, which in light of war crimes seems so incomprehensible today. Well, I'm not saying his book, you would agree with all of it, but it's very important to understand that the class barriers broke down. Now, it was a unique situation as well, because they'd been brought down literally to the level of rubble as human beings by the early 1930s because of what had happened to them.
Very few people know that. The interwar years, it actually could be better described as the modern day 30-year war, because World War I led directly to World War II through the conditions that were put upon Germany very deliberately. Like you say, this was by deliberate policy to keep the Germans starving. And I don't know how many millions of Germans died in that, not just of natural old age causes, but of starvation, of suicide. All kinds of, many, many people committed suicide. They just couldn't get out of the abject poverty and couldn't feed their families. It was really, really bad years after World War I.
Really bad. Really bad. I've forgotten the figures on suicide of mothers in the early 30s, but it's horrific.
My father was...
It's like 10,000 a month or a quarter or something. There's just... They couldn't feed their families. They were brought low. And you see, the whole is obviously warfare in another guise, because we know the Germans to be a productive and efficient and proud people. I'm fine with that. But somebody's not fine with that. It's like, I'm just going back to that point earlier. You can't run your banking scam if there's a nation on the earth that is basically through what it's doing, not what it's saying, just through what it's doing. If you go there and see what it's doing and it's not using any of your banking scam principles and it's thriving off the charts, how do you run your banking scam? You've got to get rid of that country. It's bad and advertising for you.
Exactly.
It's really
and
bad.
Not only get rid of them, but demonize them forever. I mean, if you look at the German guilt cult, it really has this guilt cult.
Yes.
That is actually starting to break down. Thank goodness. Thank goodness that there many, many German people are beginning to understand it. But I would say that that guilt cult still is there probably the vast majority of Germans within the country. I think the diaspora of Germans are more able to open their eyes about it than the German people living on German soil. But especially the young people, it's just terrible how they are so guilt-ridden that everything German is bad. And this is just it's just such a heavy weight. And I guess it's by extension now the whole white race has been given this guilt cult. And
we're all Nazis now. We're all Nazis now. I mean, they just throw it out every time. You're a Nazi. Okay.
That's true.
So is my wife then. Oh, I'm my dog, you know. And you're obviously right because, you know, I had bacon and eggs for breakfast. And how Nazi could you get having breakfast? That's Nazi too, isn't it? These people are deranged, you know. But me saying that doesn't change the situation. They remain deranged. We remain incapable of reaching them because they're deranged. There's not a communication situation. So you're right. I mean, there's that book. I think MoneyTreePublishing.com are about to redo this book, which is The Myth of German Villainy by Benton L. Bradbury.
If a person was just to read one book, one-stop shop book, that would be the one to, like, the title is really great, The Myth of German Villainy. Yeah, that's good. Thanks for bringing
that one up. It is. It's a very even-handed book. It's very even-handed. He writes it in a very gentle and ever increasing sort of way. You know, he was was he in the US Air Force? He gets stationed in Germany. He's got these preconceived ideas. He finds that they're all complete rubbish, and that that he really quite likes the German people. And he slowly looks into this and what's going on. And it's obvious to him that there's basically this non-stop spin job being waged upon the Germans. And it starts even, you know, back to that book you were mentioning earlier, the one from 1941, Germany Must Perish. Wasn't there a Canadian writer, Monica, who reversed that and got into a lot of trouble with Israel Must Perish? Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. You're talking about Arthur Topham. And he did a satire, and he did a preface saying this is a satire. And yet he was charged for, you know, under the hate speech laws, Criminal Code Canada 319, and was found guilty, even though, I mean, it was very clear that this was satire. The jury was specifically coached and asked, do you understand what satire means? Yes, they understood what satire is. All the rest of it, right? This was very clear. So mm-hmm. he did that to draw attention to that original book, Germany Must Perish. So he replaced the word Germany with Israel, and anywhere in the book where the Germans were mentioned, he just said Jews. That's all he did. Everything was identical. And it was a satire, a parody, you could say. And yet he was found guilty. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So yet, that's why I mentioned, was Theodore Kaufman found guilty of any kind of hate crime at the time? No. No. But he was of that certain tribe, the one that we're not allowed to criticize. So I guess he gets a free ride in that sense, and it kind of got promoted. And, you know, I had a friend at the time when I was posting some things online that, you know, we all must support Arthur Topham, and this is about all of us, our freedom of speech, because if he loses this case, you know, we all lose. And I had some people say to me some nonsensical arguments about, oh, but look what Hitler did with that book. He used it then to, you know, rile up the masses against the Jews. And so, again, they take something that says Germany must perish, and then he twists around like it was now, again, Hitler is bad for actually telling the German people about this book, but somehow Hitler was the one guilty. It was the most perverted, illogical thing I'd ever heard. The indoctrination goes deep.
It does.
And I do
people,
hear,
we have
hear
to
the
go,
music.
Dear Blood River Radio audience, we have run completely out of time for the first hour. We're now transitioning into the second hour. We've got a few minutes. If you got to get a cup of coffee, whatever you got to do, go ahead, because it's going to be kind of a long break. Be right back, folks.